Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
Right, rolling. Check. All right. Four Center 320. From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed. I'm Ken Napson.
I'm Joseph Scrimshaw, and this is one of our News and Cues episodes. The news stands for news, and the cues stands for questions. We've got some of both, and it's all fun. Damn it.
It's all fun indeed on a special Four Center early release news on the eve of May the 4th, the greatest holiday in the world now, apparently, Joseph.
Certainly getting bigger every year.
I'll tell you what, we'll get into catching up our life adventures. We got some sponsors to definitely talk about, but I will say this. I have forced myself to be, I've got to be less grumpy about May the 4th, because when it started to emerge years ago, I was like, every day Star Wars day in my life, and I got to choose joy in a better way.
Yeah, no, I think we've talked about it on past May the 4th when it first emerged as like this pun. Like May the 4th in like early Twitter days was like the same as like Talk Like a Pirate Day. It was like a day where you could do a couple of Twitter jokes and maybe kind of be a little frustrated by it.
And
for me, that was always not about celebrating Star Wars. It was always about the pun. And then like I have good friends who are like, May 25th is the actual, you know, release anniversary. Let's have a sense of history over a pun. But just over the years, like it's so Star Wars, right? Yeah, yeah. That it has just bubbled up from the community. It has a sense of like whimsy and absurdity, but then it also has this like fun depth of community and people wanting to celebrate Star Wars and in every business that touches Star Wars in any way going, hooray, this is a day to just flood. Oh, with Star Wars stuff.
Yeah, it is. And I'm here to celebrate it. We're here to celebrate it. I just, as always, if I hear a pun, my usual reaction is to walk away from it. But we're here to have a lot of fun talking about that and more. But before we get to all that, we want to remind you that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4Center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. A little bit later, we'll have our 4Center recommends an audiobook we think you should try out on us. And the deals aren't done there, right, Joseph?
No, we have another offer. Inside Editions, publisher of a ton of great Star Wars books, is also offering 35% off across their website with a special 4Center code. You can get your discount by entering the coupon code FC35, or you can visit the website with this link, insideeditions.com/discount/FC35. Ken, this is the week. We've been promoting this book for weeks because it is coming out on May the 4th. May the 4th be with you, Star Wars Day. We're almost there. So please, there's so much going on for May the 4th, but just rush to your computers. Go to Inside Editions and get Star Wars Galactic Baking so you can finally enjoy the pizza based on puffer pigs.
Please do it. Now that I have an air fryer, can I make puffer pigs in an air fryer? I'm going to find out. I have the book. I'm going to dig in.
Yeah, don't ask why. Ask why not when it comes to cooking with your air fryer and sometimes Star Wars. Anyway, you can check out this great book, Star Wars Galactic Baking. Ken and I both have a copy, and it is really, really fun and just great capturing of the spirit of Star Wars, and the food looks delicious, too. You can check it out with the code FC35.
Check it out. Indeed. As I said, we love to catch up, talk about Star Wars adventures, life adventures, and often how they intersect. Joseph, how's your Star Wars life?
Oh, my Star Wars life is great. This has actually been a really rich Star Wars week for me. But honestly, most of it was prepping for the show. Been reading The Skywalker Family at War by Kristen Baver and really enjoying that. I look forward to you and I discussing that. We've got a really fun Star Wars ranked coming up that we came up with. Like, well, what's a topic where we don't have to invest like a ton of research time because it's coming from memory and joy. And then I invested a ton of research time because I was having so much fun looking at toys on the internet. So a lot of fun Star Wars adventures preparing for 4Center. Mm. And then I had a weird, what I thought was going to be a life adventure that turned into a sort of very circular Star Wars adventure. My wife and I decided to have a Tidy with Music Day on Saturday.
Okay.
We've been having lots of fun, relaxing days, but you know, we want to tidy our apartment a little bit. So we're like, let's put on some music and let's just pick a small area each of our apartment. And I've got by my desk all these piles of papers, and they are multiplying like gremlins. And the pile I picked up was all sorts of old 4Center notes.
Yes.
I used to, especially when you and I and Jennifer were recording in person back in the day, I would write up the notes and then I would print out the sheet, and then I would scribble my own personal notes on the show notes. So I had this massive pile of my old 4Center thoughts, and it was really cool to look back and see like some stuff was like, oh wow, what I hoped for or guessed was wildly inaccurate, and other ones like, when did we do this? Because that's exactly what happened. That mix of total like accuracy and non-accuracy. But the thing that really hit me is I found one of our 4Center notes. I think it was you and I did this one. Jennifer had already taken her break to have her latest Padawan. Mm-hmm. And it was our last chat before we saw Rise of Skywalker.
Right.
And I remember this, but it was really affecting to see it written down in notes that a ton of what the film ended up being is stuff that I was excited to see or expected to see. Like, one of the things that we talked about was, what do you think the pacing is going to be like? How do you think it's going to balance the whiz-bang adventure serial tradition of Star Wars with more of the depth and the emotion, especially coming off of Last Jedi, which I think really invested in the slower moments of depth and with not as much focus on the constant adventure serial energy.
Right.
And seeing in the notes that, like, oh, yeah, I really expected Rise of Skywalker to reinvest in the adventure serial and have that energy and that pace. And like, that's just one example of what was on that notes. It was just a kind of interesting and fun reminder for me. You and I always talk about going into the movies like Luke going into the tree on Dagobah. It's the only things in there, what you take with you.
Mm-hmm.
And how much what we take in with us does make a difference. And just remembering that, well, I can articulate and argue all the reasons that I think Rise of Skywalker is great. Mm. A part of the reason that the experience was moving for me is I was, you know, my heart was singing in the same key as the movie.
Right.
You know, it was what I expected, and not in a good, it checked the boxes. It was just like the energy and the mood and the spirit. Mm-hmm. I was on the same wavelength as before I even sat down in the theater.
Yeah.
And just remembering how much of a difference that makes was my reflective Star Wars adventure of the week.
We've discussed so much Star Wars here in our sixth year of broadcasting here. And then you and I were discussing things before on Jedi Alliance and other places and other podcast appearances and stage shows for you. all the stuff we've been rolling up our sleeves and getting in this. I think it's fun to just reflect, but also to see what we've learned and what we've, I love when predictions go wrong. I hate when I personally would even come close to something, because I want to be surprised, in the sense of I don't consider myself talented enough to make a film like that. So don't take any of my ideas. but at the same time, the spirit and the vibe and kind of digging into the themes. I don't have any of my notes now. I wish I'm going to have to dig around. Maybe I got some Google Docs saved somewhere.
Well, we always have the podcast look back on, but I couldn't keep the mountains of notes. Yeah. And now I'm just doing them digitally. So I'm, so I picked out a couple to save for the memories, for things that were, on point and things that were intriguingly, fascinatingly off point. And I really don't mean it as predictions, on Vegas of like, this is what I think is going to happen and hooray, I'm right. This really is about like the mood and the energy and, what are you bringing with you that affects how you view it,
you're right. Songs in the key of Star Wars. There you go.
exactly. And we're here on the precipice of watching Bad Batch, and I'm so excited. I don't have any wild predictions of this is what's going to happen, but I feel like I'm on the wavelength, and I'm excited to be on the wavelength with Bad Batch.
Bad Batch is an interesting thing, as this is, early reviews are coming out and all those kind of things, but you and I are going to see it for the first time when it drops tonight at the time of this recording. And we have done the least amount of what we think is going to happen. Our Star Wars ranked on what we need in Bad Batch, those kind of fun shows we've done in the past. And we'll probably do those again we're never going to stop talking about Kenobi, Andor, Acolyte, all those kind of things. But with Bad Batch, it's almost fun where I'm like, yeah, I have no clue. I have no clue what I'm going to tune into tonight. Yeah, we have ideas. We've seen the trailer. We've talked about that. But I really don't know. And it's been kind of fun.
Yeah, I feel like in my mind, I have written the first chapter of a choose your own adventure book. And there are like all of these different ways that I could see Bad Batch going. And I'm so excited to see which way they go.
We will indeed.
Anyway, that's enough about me going on and on about my circular Star Wars adventures, talking about old Force Center thoughts on our new episode of Force Center. What were your Star Wars or life adventures this week?
Well, I've been on a big music kick. I'm a big music fan. We've talked about music. I know you are as well, and especially you being out there in that Minnesota area where so many great bands, so many of my favorite bands, the Semisonic Replacements coming out of that neck of the woods. So it sneaks into our Star Wars conversation, but I've been doing that a lot. So I've just been like working out to like YouTube videos of Monsters and Men or Haim. They're some of my favorite bands. I've just been playing on repeat over and over recently. But I was like, all right, I'm going to watch something else. And I was like, I don't have to watch Star Wars. We're not reviewing a Clone Wars episode until Bad Batch this week. I don't have to, quote unquote, have to sit down and watch Clone Wars while I'm on the treadmill. So I was like, what should I watch? Yeah, you know what I'm going to watch? I'm going to watch Star Wars. And I went to the Vintage and I watched the Faithful Wookiee, the animated portion of the holiday special. Now, yeah. I have I've seen, you know, the holiday special over the years. I've seen YouTube clips, seen parts of it. I can't tell you I don't think, to my knowledge, I've ever sat down and watched it start to finish, right? I just so familiar with every little beat and every little song and the Boba Fett stuff and the animated. But I don't think I've ever just focused on just that animated short. And I did. It was very interesting. It had its own flavor to it. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to count this as the Mandalorian pilot. You watch that and you take it in. It's not just Favreau going, grab the pulse rifle. It's Favreau going, let's do that. Let's do that as a series.
Well, I wonder how much it lodged in his psyche when he was a youth.
Mm-hmm. Crazy creatures. I help you. You help me. Even Boba Fett is kind of played as a, you know, is he on your side or not? You know, until you learn he isn't, of course, with Vader being involved in the story. So anyway, it was fascinating. And you got the folks doing the voices there. You got some great Luke Skywalker screaming, naive farm boy trying to help the day voices. I mean, it was really fascinating. And I haven't really just done that. And once again, you know, we love this stuff. And even when you're like, watch anything but Star Wars, press play on Star Wars. It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. So if you haven't had it out there, if you haven't had a chance to take in the Faithful Wookiee, give it a go. It's definitely a weird Star Wars time capsule, but also a look into the future, I think.
I love that. You've got me really intrigued to just sit down and rewatch it, because I have only ever watched it in the context of going on the epic adventure of the entire holiday special. Yeah. So I have never watched it free of visions of Lumpy flitting through my head.
Yeah, yeah. Or Ackman is singing, and there's so much stuff. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But yeah, I highly recommend that.
You have got me intrigued. I'm gonna rewatch it.
Speaking of intrigued, let's talk about Kenobi. Let's go to Star Wars news. Kenobi speaks. All right. Ewan McGregor sat down with the Hollywood Reporter, talking a lot about Halston, the new show coming out that he's in, starring as Halston there. And of course, you're going to get to some Obi-Wan Kenobi. Of course, you're going to get to Star Wars. So I figured let's do so. We do this often, and a lot of times these are big Star Wars news stories out of another interview, and we love breaking them down. But I don't know, Joseph. Our love of Kenobi, the character, your love of Kenobi leading the way and into the show. I actually got really excited. So we'll dive in, you know?
Yeah, no, this is a great interview, and I love Obi-Wan Kenobi, but Ewan McGregor himself is just a fascinating, interesting person, and this whole interview I thought was great.
Oh yeah, you know, side note on that, like, it I used to, you know, subscribe to Premiere and Movie Line or whatever those, you know, back in the 90s, and I used to have all those, you know, Rolling Stone and I used to get
Flick Talk, right?
Yeah, Fade In. I used to get like a stack of magazines every month. And so this, I had flashbacks to that just sitting in my car on a lunch break at my old day job when I was washing dishes as a 16-year-old reading Premiere magazine and an interview with someone in a good old celebrity profile. And McGregor being such a fixture of the 90s, which is just, you know, that's my generation, my decade of growing up, yours as well, Joseph, you know, into young adulthood. Like, he's such a part of that. It was interesting to see him talk about that era as well.
Yeah, yeah, and talk about his having those quotes read back to him from earlier interviews and going, ooh, yeah, I was a bit young and pompous. And, you know, you have those moments every once in a while where you're like, I'm really glad I was not famous or successful as a youth.
and to all you listeners out there who might be riding high in your 20s, God bless you, number one. Do good stuff, work hard. Yeah, but yes, McGregor speaks the truth. Looking back and going, oh yeah, that was me. I don't want to be that again.
It is natural. It's growth.
It's natural. It is. All right, so here's some things he said about Star Wars. He said, this one's been going around, of course. For months, we've been doing these monster 2.5 hours sessions of sword fights and hand-to-hand stuff. Hand-to-hand stuff. So this is, you know, we know Kathleen Kennedy has told all of us this is the rematch of the century. Doesn't mean he's only going to be fighting Vader in this, or maybe does he even fight Vader at all? I don't know. I would think so after that, that statement from Kathleen Kennedy. But I heard this. I got excited. Joseph, how much action do we expect Kenobi to see? And what are our expectations / wishes for this one more fight with Vader?
Yeah, there's so much in what you're saying. The hand-to-hand stuff is really intriguing. Mm-hmm. That makes me feel like there is going to be a bit more action in this. I think on Force Center we've talked about, and I know many other friends in the Star Wars talkers have talked early on about Kenobi being like, this could be like the indie movie of Star Wars. Right. You know, we're spending time with him, introspective on Tatooine, and I think we are going to get a bit of that, but I think that this is going to be a little bit more of an action adventure serial, you know.
Yeah,
I think Indian in the front, action in the back. I don't know. I think that hearing this not only keying it up as like, no, we're straight up announcing Hayden, we're straight up announcing Vader, we're calling it the rematch of the century. Obviously, that suggests some big combat, but the hand to hand stuff really suggests to me that the picture that comes into my mind is Kenobi's on a mission to stop something, to make his way to Vader, and he is running into, in classic Star Wars adventure serial cliffhanger tradition, obstacles along the way.
Yeah.
You know, and is the hand-to-hand stuff because he's trying to travel incognito and doesn't want to be whipping out the lightsaber, but he's got a problem with this person, and this person's an obstacle, and he's got to get through it, and this person attacks him, and, you know, I'm wondering if it's going to be a little bit more of that that feel, that vibe.
Yeah, look, I can't deny that I've been so intrigued for this series, but also the movie. And I know the movie, if there was a movie version, as Ewan confirms for 7 years or so, he's been on board to do something with Kenobi. the idea, you know, it's going to move fast. It's going to have some action. I get it. We're not going to have my dinner with Vader, the indie Star Wars film. But as a TV show, I can't deny. I've been thinking about that Twin Suns episode of Rebels and just going, great, 6 episodes of that, I'm on board. Which is silly. I know that's not how it works. But this got me excited beyond just the Vader stuff. I'm clearly excited for that. But you kind of said it there, Joseph, just like along the way, getting to Vader, the act of getting to Vader can't be simple unless he sends an email, meet me in this playground at noon. You know, so who's he going to fight? Does he want to fight? How's it going to go? And like you use it hand to hand to hide who he really is. And now the idea of the guy, Revenge of the Sith, and the guy in Twin Suns, Rebels, and New Hope, that gap, we've talked about the emotional connection, but now the physical change and gap, like campfire guy. Yeah, I'm done with fighting. I've done a lot along the way. Had to use my hands.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, just in terms of the, like, of fun, put your Star Wars nerd head on and speculate, you know, maybe some live-action Inquisitors get in his way. That could be a fun reason to fight. But also, like, I think there's room. I keep saying Indy is in indie film, but I also think there's some room for some Indy is in Indiana Jones.
Right, right.
That, like, it's been 10 years. I haven't done a lot, but I feel compelled to act, and I'm rusty.
Right.
You know? There could be, I think, some real sort of charming Kenobi getting back up to his Clone Wars era sort of fighting. Is he is trying to, whatever he's trying to do, book passage, you know, get information. Not that he's going to beat information out of people, but, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, right. Trying to overhear something and people, you know, gangsters come up on him, or, you know, like, I know this isn't going to happen, but my my weird fantasy that it begins with Obi-Wan going somewhere and then Bosk's like, hey, aren't you? And then he's got to punch Bosk, you know.
That's episode two.
These things
two.
Happen.
Yeah. Chapter two, the punching of Bosk. Yeah. I hadn't stopped to think about, well, what if he's got to fight off 4 stormtroopers and doesn't want to, but has to? I don't want this just to be a remix of Mandalorian. I don't think it is on any level. Deborah Chow has, in terms of direction, has handled both the quiet stuff and the action stuff quite well, very well, in Mandalorian. And we got Joby Harold writing this now, taking over the writing. So I'm sure there's going to be a lot in there. But this, excitement's the only thing I can say. I read this and I fell for it. Everyone else is getting excited. I am too. I just love that we could have some Kenobi in action, you know?
Yeah, the other thing for me about talking about action is I think it is going to be motivated from an emotional place. You know, I don't think it's just going to be the physical rematch of the century. I think it really is the emotional rematch of the century. If everything that Obi-Wan is doing is kind of motivated by this idea of he faced Anakin / Vader, he didn't manage to save Anakin, and he didn't end Vader. He didn't do either of the things that could have saved the galaxy from suffering. And he has this interesting approach that all these Jedi wrestle with when they're in exile of, when are my actions going to help more? When are they going to hurt more? And if Kenobi has come to the place of, I didn't do either of the two acceptable things, save Anakin or end Vader, I have to do one of them. And he's going out into the galaxy with that motivation. That means all of the interesting action will come from an emotional place, which I think is so important to Star Wars.
Yeah. I mean, I'm over here talking about punching stormtroopers in the face, but going into that theme you're talking about, because you're literally describing what the conversation has been since Revenge of the Sith, right? In the fandom, sometimes it's a meme or a joke of, gee, Obi-Wan just left his friend to burn up and die. Like couldn't put a blade through him or whatever. You got to imagine Kenobi's thinking the same thing. So that's a great starting point.
I'd call him A, I'd call him B.
I chose C, and that wasn't the right way. Let me go back and go get into it there. So that's a great motivation for the violence that might be coming.
Exactly. And for me, that speaks to, you know, your great question of, you know, what do we want out of the conflict with Vader is... I think that's a really interesting emotional place for him to be tracking down Vader with the first step of, I'm going to try to fulfill Padme's wish and I'm going to try to get through to you. Yeah. And then what happens when that doesn't work?
What happens when it doesn't work? He went on to bemoan a bit of the prequel shooting process, particularly Revenge of the Sith, same with the massive amount of blue screen that George was using there. It made it hard for him to get into the dialogue. Says, don't mean to be rude, but it wasn't exactly Shakespeare. Not anything new we haven't heard before, but I wanted to actually specifically ask you, just as I'm asking myself, what do we as devout prequelists think when we read things like that from those involved in the movie? Now, he's not saying the movies were crap, and he's acknowledging that they weren't received as well, and that kind of hurt. We've heard that stuff before, and so I get it, but I almost want to know, almost as if we're off air, Joseph, around a campfire, what do you think when you read stuff like that?
Oh, I think it is... nothing new, I think, is my main first reaction is when I see a quote like that, I imagine all of the kind of clickbaity headlines of, you know, Ewan McGregor finally reveals, like, nope.
Yeah, right.
He's been saying that for years. So I think this is something that he's been honest about for a very, very long time. I think that all of my love of the prequels, I love them despite the fact that there's this truth that I feel many of the people involved have talked about. Lucas himself has said, I don't really like talking to actors. Yeah, I feel like the meaning's on the page and I like the actors who just get it and do it, you know?
Yeah.
And I feel like actors like Ewan McGregor has said that was hard, you know? And I would have wanted to dig in and find some more depth. And I think there are moments of the prequels, as much as I love them with all my heart, that you can feel a little bit of what I would describe as like that coldness.
Right.
Because of those things. And I love the prequels despite some of that coldness. So it doesn't really bother me when an actor acknowledges, I wanted to figure out a little bit more of the warmth or the depth of that scene. Mm-hmm. Because I think when I watch the prequels, I bring everything I know about the characters and feel about it. And the coldness disappears to me.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a warm and rich story because I fill in all of these feelings and these thoughts about the characters. Mm. The other thing that I'd say is, especially having been an actor myself and having worked with a lot of actors, it is nothing new for actors to feel like I couldn't quite get into that scene. It wasn't working for me. And then the person from the outside being, you just nailed that.
Right, right.
You just knocked it out of the ballpark. What you did was incredibly moving and affecting. And I think Ewan McGregor's performance in the prequels is amazing, you know, and it's sort of like, it's a bummer for me if he felt like he struggled, but it doesn't change how I feel about his performance.
Yeah, look, and there's been some times with the sequel era where we've heard some stuff, public stuff in interviews where I'm like, man, I wish you could enjoy it as much as we did. And I understand it just doesn't work. Like you're describing on a very direct creator way where, you know, you get up on stage and you think, man, that was shit and people are happy. And yes, I swore because that's what we creators do sometimes on stage. it's a good reminder for me to do exactly what you talked about there. And it's a little bit of that engage with the story presented, but just engage with the themes and the things that Lucas was dealing with. I can't deny it. And I've highlighted some of the moments, particularly Attack of the Clones, where, you know, just the dirt doesn't even move underneath the feet of everybody. And it kind of, I can't separate my brain from that sometimes, but to choose to engage with what's there and choose to celebrate what we as Star Wars fans know. That's not wrong. I'm not a film critic, so I don't have to rate this. I don't have to, you know, I'm a Star Wars fan. I have to find out what's there for me as a Star Wars fan. And so I had a reaction to this of like, man, you know, God, because he's so good. You know, he's so good in those and everyone loves him. And here he is doing it again. I hope he gets to appreciate the legacy of those films for a new generation of fans and everything. And I think he will. And he does. And I think he's, obviously, it you know, he's ready to dive back in, and it also highlights even though there's been times in Mandalorian where I maybe have been a little grumpy about how I think things look, it's only going to get better, and that technology is just you can tell this, it's going to help actors overcome some of those problems they've had in the past. While George Lucas and Peter Jackson were pushing the boundaries of how to shoot films on that level, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think hearing that Ewan McGregor felt that way, you know, felt more immersed is great. Mm-hmm. I think the other thing that I always want to say about the prequels and the kind of the question of, you know, the directing, the acting, is it cold, is it wooden, all that is, yeah, you know, everything is really about what you bring to it. Mm-hmm. And we have heard from fans here on Force Center that people who saw these films as a kid don't feel any of that. They looked up there and they related to Anakin or Padme and Obi-Wan, and they saw themselves and they feel it's electric and alive. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just so important for us all to remember that for art, you know, mm-hmm, there isn't a truth, you know, yep, it's a conversation. It's informed by what you bring to it.
Absolutely. And speaking of championing the current way of shooting things on Kenobi, Mando, and other things, I'm sure McGregor championed the stagecraft/volume of work, saying the project, the virtual backgrounds, project Ron Burgundy again. They project virtual backgrounds onto this massive LED screen. So if you're in a desert, you're standing in the middle of a desert. All right, Tatooine, we get that. If you're in the snow, you're surrounded by the snow. What? And if you're in a cockpit of a starfighter, you're in space. It's going to feel so much more real. All right, Joseph, I don't care. I want to wildly speculate. Snow planet? Do you think there's a snow planet, or is he just throwing examples out there?
I think this is absolute 100% confirmation that he's going to Ordo Plutonia, home of the Talls, from the Clone Wars episode Trespass. Clearly. Absolutely.
100%.
That's the snow planet that every Star Wars fan thinks of first, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. That's the one. Mygito second, but definitely that one.
No, I think that is... Ken, how is there so many things that always make fans go, Ilum?
Yeah, because I'm like, oh, Ilum.
I think that he could absolutely just be using an example.
Yeah.
There's, I don't think there's any reason for Kenobi to be anywhere near Hoth. But the Ilum thing is really interesting because we know that it is in this place of transition from an organic, sacred Jedi space to a mechanized, tortured, dark side, mm-hmm, imperial place. And that makes it an interesting place for Kenobi to end up for some reason.
Yeah. I think in terms of the Ilum predictions, I think we're going to keep predicting it until it's really right. And I think Jedi Fallen Order it's a great use of Ilum. I think Force Awakens is in the end a great use of Ilum. I wouldn't have minded getting a little bit more of that, but I think this might be just keep predicting it until it's right. And this feels right.
I just feel like as Star Wars fans, every time we see snow or hear the word snow, we're going to be like that Leo DiCaprio image from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood pointing at the screen. If we see snow, finger snap, point at the screen, Ilum.
And again, I think more likely he's throwing out examples, though seems pretty specific with desert planet and a cockpit of a starfighter, which is intriguing to me as well. But the Leo gif meme, that's a great way to look at it, because it was, I think I probably had a white claw in my hand, but I was just like, oh, wait, because it could just work. It could work.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it's just makes me very excited for the show.
It really, really was. Final one there. And I know we're spending a lot of time, but I think this is just, I love talking about this series. I just can't wait. He finally, McGregor playfully dodged the young Luke Skywalker question, saying, while grinning, the author of the article pointed out, I don't know. That's very possible when asked about screen tests with a young Luke Skywalker. So, confirmation, Joseph, we're pretty, that's confirmation, right? Right? A grin?
A grin. Yeah, I'm getting more and more excited for young Luke. I think the confirmation from Lucasfilm that this is about Kenobi dealing with the specter of Vader so sets this up for him, for Kenobi's, the happy ending, in quotes, of this series would be Kenobi being absolutely firm in his conviction that Luke is the new hope.
Yeah.
And for that to be interesting and in substantive, you know, a scene or two with young Luke would be great.
I mean, it's to the point of, to me, it would be odd if Luke isn't there, right? at any level. I don't care if he goes to talk to Owen and Beru and Luke's just playing in the background. It could just be simple as that. Like,
yeah,
it would be weird if it wasn't there. So,
yeah, but I mean, in the way I know, we've seen things in comics and all that, but going back to A New Hope, the way Luke's like, I wonder if he's talking about old Ben Kenobi. Like, Luke is very clear who Ben Kenobi is, which suggests some fun interactions.
Fun interactions indeed. So that's our look at that big interview. Any final thoughts on Kenobi or Ewan McGregor, Joseph?
I don't know if I've ever heard this story and just don't remember it. I love the detail that he was working on Velvet Goldmine when he found out that he was cast as Obi-Wan in The Phantom Menace. And I love this sentence. I was getting craft services with Christian when I got the call. Christian Bale.
Do you think, is that the other side of that call with McCallum? With Rick McCallum? Dude's gonna be so boop and cool.
Probably. And he's got a ham sandwich hanging out of his mouth with Christian Bale staring at him.
Yeah, Christian Bale's like, what? Who's that? Is that Rick McCallum? Is that Rick McCallum? Is there something for me?
Yeah, tell him to get out of my light.
Yeah, good for you, Rick. Oh, that's great. All right. I can't wait for the series. Come on. Yeah. Come on.
And we got some questions about it. So we're not done talking.
We're sorry, but we're not sorry. All right. Next story. A Disney cruise ship will feature Star Wars themed hyperspace lounge. Yay. StarWars.com covered this. All right. So we're not going to spend a ton of time on this. But, and I'll disclose here up top, Joseph. I'm personally not much of a cruise ship fan. I've never been on one. And well, Ked, you don't know. I just don't really. There's a lot of things about it. Even things I've heard and how people are treated, but also just the idea of being in an open water with nothing but a buffet of food just doesn't appeal to me. But it does appeal to a lot of people, including my aunt and uncle, who used to go on cruise ships about 3 times a year. You've been on cruise ships. You've been on comedy cruises, Joseph. I don't know if you don't agree with me on that.
Oh, no, I cruises are super weird, but I really enjoyed them. I've only had the experience of being on the Jonathan Colton cruise and the ones that I was on there. So there was this big block of musicians and comedians all generally under the sort of a pop culture banner performing. And then a bunch of people who are there specifically for that performance mixed with just regular cruise goers, you know? So it was like, I got to have this kind of specific experience that I was with this specific group of people to do this specific thing, to perform and have fun and have the sense of community. But then there was also some of the like very stereotypical, just like, you know, an older couple from Nebraska going, what are you people doing? So I kind of got to see both sides. And cruises are just really weird, but I find them kind of delightful. They're so, to me, they're absurd because, you know, they all, to different scales, have that, like, we are here to create this magical experience. Mm-hmm. There's very much a, we can get the customers anything you need, any time of day, we will get for you. So there's, on one side, it's this, like, the total, like, bubble of human society and human society that is structured to be, like, let's get the guests anything they want. And then right outside your window is the uncontrollable power of nature that could kill you any moment. And you cannot call the manager about the ocean, you know? Anything on the cruise, you can call the manager about. But immediately outside your window is the reminder that the will of the force has the true power and you can't control. There's a lot you can't control. There's a lot you can't call the manager about. And the constant reminder of that is right outside your window.
Right outside your little port, little window. You know, I've talked about my fear of being launched into space, drowning in the ocean. There's a lot of things going on. No judgment for anyone who likes to go. I just, there's a lot about it. But that said, Joseph, here in this description of what is coming in the summer of 2022 on the new ship Disney Wish, it's got me kind of excited. Senior creative director of Walt Disney Imagineering, Danny Hanke, designed this new hyperspace lounge on the ship. It's open for kids during the day with non-alcoholic drinks and everything. Then at night, it's all for the adults who love Star Wars. It is going to match the vibe and aesthetic of Dryden Voss's First Light yacht. That actually, number one, you and I both love the first Light. We kind of want to party with Dryden Voss. Maybe not support his work, but we want to party. What do you think just about that, Joseph?
Oh, I absolutely love this. I loved what the designer was talking about, how when they were building this, they're going like, do we want to do another cantina type thing? But we got that in Galaxy's Edge. And then the First Light was coming out. Canto Bight was coming out. I think something in the design, it owes a little bit to Outlander Club as well. And I just love the idea of, we've got some recreations of the down and dirty cantina. Let's make a little bit more of these Star Wars, you know, cocktail lounge.
Yes. 100% behind you on that. The lounge will feature many planets, locations, canon accurate skirmishes, no battles. They weren't allowed to have battles, just skirmishes. and this is the way I envision it is like you're having a drink in Star Tours, which things are happening all around you there. And you've got Tatooine, which would be like Mando themed, Batuu, tied to Galaxy's Edge, obviously, Mustafar, Rogue One era, and Endor Kif Beer during the reign of the First Order. These things will play out on the screens in the lounge, so it's like you're flying through on a spaceship, flying through some of this action. Interesting choices and eras, Joseph.
Yeah, no, I like the jumping around in eras. I think it is really great to have big Star Wars things like this celebrate that, you know, Star Wars can be lots of different aesthetics, you know, and these are some fun environments. And I kind of love taking something like Endor and making it like not just Endor, but Kef Beer too, you know, and really that's the story. So having fun things like this that tie them together is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm going to be, if I was on this cruise and I would be annoying every night I'd go there, I'd be asking like the maître d' like, Hey, what era are we in? I need to know. So I need to get my dialogue with the bartender canon accurate. Sir, just go take your seat. Rumored to feature Sabacc and quote alien entertainment. So I love the idea of playing Sabacc. I, you and I both got, I think the Han Solo card game featured in the motion picture set, right?
Yes, because there is a problem with locking down the ownership of the word Sabacc. So it is the Han Solo card game.
Since owning that card set, I've just dreamed about, you know, having a Friday night with some friends playing Sabacc, but like the real, like the more in-depth version. So I'm intrigued by that. But I got to ask you, Joseph, is this your dream? If you find out that Lulu Primoc is there, are you booking a cruise ship?
I think that would honestly tip it over for me. Like we talk a lot on this podcast as we cover news about what we would do and what we would not do. I think if it was clear that there were an animatronic of Lulu Primoc, I would absolutely make this a priority. That would put it over the top.
That'd be for real.
Yep.
And I was going to, because that's kind of my follow-up was like, whether or not we want to go on a cruise, this sounds very impressive, especially on the heels of what they pulled off with Galaxy's Edge, which, I mean, I'm such a believer in Galaxy's Edge. If folks out there listening have not had the chance to go, I hope you're all blessed with the opportunity to go at some point, either location. It's amazing. Joseph, I know you still beam talking about building that lightsaber.
Yeah, it was a good time.
Good time. But thoughts on what they can... I don't know, just general thoughts on just continuing to raise the bar on interactive Star Wars experiences.
Yeah, I think it's great because I think the designer even talked about this. There's such a history of immersion in Star Wars. You and I talk about it a lot with the experience of our generation is taking the story home through action figures and kind of immersing ourselves in this fantasy world on our living room carpets.
Yes.
Yeah. With Bosk and Dengar having weird adventures that we make up. There's such a history all through different generations, whether it's, video games or playing on the playground or whatever, of immersing yourself in the world. Mm-hmm. And I really love any way that you can find to do it. And I really do appreciate, it is funny compared to George Lucas looking out at an audience at a convention and saying it's for 12-year-olds. Mm-hmm. But the truth is it is for 12-year-olds of all ages. I really love this perspective of like, it's fun to have a place for adults to just chill, to just sit in a bar, have a themed drink and watch little Star Wars adventures and pretend you're out there in the galaxy. I love it. It's so to the heart of what I think has made Star Wars powerful. The stories are amazingly powerful and they always would be, but the immersion I think is what makes it a cultural event. The immersion is why fans organically created a Star Wars holiday called May the 4th based on a pun because the immersion matters.
Yeah, I mean, I've mentioned before, but growing up near Pismo Beach, California, just sand dunes, and you go there and play with your friends, play with your family, and I bring my figures, and that was always fun. I dig out little caves and play with my, I had Hoth Luke on Tatooine. It was the X-Wing crashed, I guess. But then just going out there, by myself, my family, with their dad, mom, and my sister didn't want to play Star Wars with me. So just daydreaming that I was on Tatooine, that's immersive. And that's where it starts. And that's what you and I always talk about. So to see it now and to use this Imagineering power, say what you will about Disney. Some people, I get it. I get some of the things there. Just like same with cruise ships for me. But the moment I walked in Galaxy's Edge, I wanted to talk in character to the cast members. I wanted to play along. And when it started raining the day I was there, I was just like, oh, it's raining on Batuu today. Wow. This is, you feel silly. You feel like a grown super nerd, but that's the stigma of our generation that looked down on that stuff. I love embracing it now. And I love the immersion that they create. It's powerful. It's just like the films. It's powerful.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the other things just made me kind of excited is one of the cruises that I went on had a main mall area that was entirely internal to the ship. So you couldn't see the water,
Right.
You still felt the sensation. And one of the things in this promenade that was entirely internal was a really classic British pub. So if you just looked into the pub, you'd be like, I'm in a British pub. I maybe sense some movement of water. You turn around, outside of it is this weird promenade. There's something so otherworldly about spaces like that in a cruise ship that I think that is what this is going to capture as well, specifically being on a cruise ship. It's this strange world within a world.
I love that. All right. Maybe you convince me. Fine. I'll get all you can eat shrimp and head on out to the bar on the cruise ship. We've asked this kind of stuff before, but I love kind of bringing it back. And sometimes the answers change. What is your ultimate at this point in your life, Joseph? What is your ultimate dream interactive Star Wars experience or location? What have they not done yet that you want to try?
This one's pretty close. Like particularly if it was more accessible than having to go on a whole cruise, if this becomes popular and like, we're just going to make these and there'll be one in LA and Detroit and Chicago and New York. And like, yeah, I can just go down to the, to this club. That would be thrilling for me. I think the other one, which will probably never happen, is just a recreation of the Jedi archives in the temple. And you can hang out there and read a book.
Oh, that'd be great. And just have someone, an actor playing Jocasta New, who just comes along and like tells you to put your feet down or something like that.
Yes, I want Jocasta New to shush me.
Yeah. Hey, look, and I'd love to spend some time at Dexter's Diner. And I always go to Brightree Village. I've been looking up some, possibly trying to maybe getting out to Yosemite again for the first time in 25 years. It's one of my favorite spots, and Grace has never been, and I want to try to get out there. You know, and you got to book ahead and blah, blah, blah. But there's a lot of, you know, we're not campers. So, but I was looking at a lot of the camping options and I was like, you know, I don't want to do this. But if it was, you know, Brightree Village and it was an interactive Brightree Village camping experience, you get a hut and you stay up there. I'd try that out. But the one I want, this seems like it couldn't happen, but I actually think it could. The casinos out in Vegas, the sales, there's Rio, I heard, is going to change hands. It might already have by the time, I missed it during the pandemic, but pre-pandemic I was out there and a friend of mine was actually trying to be part of a group that purchases the Rio. And there was a casino idea of kind of like, for lack of a better word, a nerd casino, a nerd themed casino. And the idea of an actual functional Canto Bite.
Oh,
man, you know, I love my slot machines. If I could walk around, drunk, tripping over BB-8, playing slot machines and have characters and people acting out, it's too much. It probably, and it's not realistic. I get it, but it's also not unrealistic.
It is not unrealistic. I think you can have the full Dabusque experience.
Yes. Yes. So that would be my choice.
That is a great one. I hope that one comes to pass and we can go there together.
Indeed. So we're almost done, but we're going to touch on some news that emails came across this morning. I think a lot of people are talking about it now. For May the 4th, I'm sure there'll be more things and more things we'll pick up on after we talk about Bad Batch and that kind of stuff. So stay tuned next week for updated news. If anything giant breaks, we'll talk about it. But we got a couple things, Joseph, here. We got The Simpsons, Maggie Simpson in The Force Awakens from its nap, in a daycare far, far away. This is Maggie on an epic quest for her stolen pacifier, brings her face-to-face with young Padawan, Sith Lords, familiar droids, rebel scum, and an ultimate battle against the dark side. So that will be out there. Then we got Star Wars Biomes, take a virtual vacation to some of the Star Wars films' most iconic and beloved locations, like Hoth, Tatooine, and Sorgan. We can go fishing. And it's a charming series, whisks you off to fly over tours of a galaxy far, far away, and Star Wars vehicle fly-throughs, get up close and personal with two of Star Wars films' most iconic and beloved ships, as this content takes you on a trip through the Millennium Falcon and an Imperial Star Destroyer. So quick thoughts on those quick pieces that they're going to drop for us.
Yeah, the Simpsons thing looks fun. I'm very intrigued to see it. I like the poster. The poster is very cross-generational, that it's based on the A New Hope poster, but then we have BB-8 from the sequels, and then we have Darth Bart, maybe? we have a Simpsonized Sith, so that's fun to see them really tying all the eras together. Oh, in the biomes and the vehicle fly-throughs. Ooh, I'm really excited about that. I'm curious to see if it really is just visual, if there's any sort of, not narrative to it, but like any sort of voiceover telling you about it. Or my wife has got queued up some things that are just like, hey, there's a camera on this train going through Switzerland, and it's kind of just like for relaxing,
Yeah.
And there's a part of me that's like, that sounds nice. Talk about immersion, right? Because a part of what we like about Star Wars is sometimes just the aesthetic, the fantasy. And there's a part of me that'd be like, yeah, no, I think I'd watch, just a camera flying around Hoth, and every once in a while you see a Tauntaun. Great. It sounds peaceful.
Right? Like a pack of Tauntaun being chased by a Wampa.
Yep. And whatever else happens on Hoth, that's, every once in a while, oh, there's the ruins of the ion cannon. Okay.
Oh, gosh, that's kind of cool. I'm excited for that. It's just something to have on. A lot of times, I hope there's nothing. I mean, if they could do a good VO and it's fun, that'd be great too. But a lot of times, especially when I'm prepping like Force Center News or something, I want to have something on, but I don't want to be distracted. So just flying over Tatooine would be great Star Wars news gathering content.
Yeah. There's a series in particular called Ariel America, and I think it's Ariel Other Things too, that do kind of take you through the history of a place. So I'm so curious to see if it is just the take a relaxing fly around Tatooine, or if it is, a host being like, and now we're going to Mos Espa. Of course, we know what happened here.
We know what happened. The penguins go across. As far as vehicle flythroughs, the Falcon, look, I love the Falcon. I'll spend a lot of time in the Falcon. I'm excited for that. But I'm actually kind of excited to go inside Imperial Star Destroyer. It's just They're so big. They're so massive. Show me where the break rooms are. Show me, is there a gym? Do the Stormtroopers work out? What's going on? I'm intrigued by that one more than I thought I would be.
Yeah, absolutely. Take me to the evil lunchroom. I want to see it.
So we'll keep you updated on that stuff and any late breaking May 4th news. Right now, though, we're going to get ready to take a quick break. But before we do that, we want to have our Force Center Recommends, an audiobook we think you should try out on us. Joseph.
Yeah, that's right, because we got a bunch of Kenobi talk in this episode. We are suggesting a book that has a lot of quality Kenobi content. It is Master and Apprentice by Claudia Gray.
Check it out. Download your free audiobook today at audibletrial.com/ForceCenter. Again, that's audibletrial.com/ForceCenter for your free audiobook. All right, quick break on the other side. Your questions here on Force Center.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, Force Center friends, make sure you're keeping up to date on all the great content from Jennifer Landa. Whether it's YouTube, Instagram, or TikTok, you whippersnappers, Force Center's own Jennifer Landa continues to bring you fun, informative, and insightful laughs and moments.
Also, Jennifer brings her experience and perspective as a Star Wars-loving mother to her DIY projects, blogs, and more. So be sure to head on over to JenniLanda.com, that's JENILANDA.com, for articles like how to make your own Darth Maul sneakers or 10 unique Star Wars baby gift ideas.
Follow Jen on Twitter and Instagram at Jennifer Landa and on TikTok as JenniferLanda1138.
Yeah.
Welcome back to Force Center. It's the news and cues. It's time for the cues. Joseph, what do we got?
We got two questions from Twitter and two questions from our patrons on Patreon. Thank you for everybody who sends questions. We're going to jump into those Twitter questions first. The first one comes from Dr. Addy. Dr. Addy says, when do you think Obi-Wan figured out Anakin, one, didn't actually die on Mustafar, and two, was Darth Vader? Is this something you want, hope to see explored in Kenobi? I will start, Ken, by just saying, yes, I would love to see it explored. Even if it's a flashback, you know, a lot, plenty of timeline discussion to be had. But yes, I'd love to see it explored. What is, we can get into thoughts of the when and the how and fun stuff like that. But what's your initial reaction? Do you want to see this explored in Kenobi?
Yeah, I want to see... I want to see the weight of that knowledge and what it does to him, right? Which means he has to have the knowledge. So I don't want to necessarily see it in the show. Like he's at a bar and someone's like, hey, you're that Darth Vader guy. What? But I'm open to anything, how they want to present it. But the weight of the knowledge has to have, important place in the show to me. And this is a question I think we've all asked. So we talked earlier about the, you know, the kind of the meme of, the general thought meme of, hey, Kenobi should have stabbed his friend in the heart instead of let him to die on a lava lake there. So this all factors into me too, of just like, did he know the name Darth Vader? I can't remember if Anakin said it or not to him, or if that been going around. And I gotta be honest with you, this is where I almost refuse to go digging into Wikipedia to find out the answers. I love living in this area of, I can't quite remember. Is there a moment where Anakin says, my name's Darth Vader now, don't forget it, bub, and Kenobi hears this? How disconnected is he? What's coming to him in his dreams and his visions? So I would love for the show to explore it and maybe just give me a good, wonderful answer finally.
Yeah, I think... For me, I am so interested in this question because of what it means for the character of Kenobi, you know, and I don't have any strong opinion about exactly, you know, when in the timeline. I like the idea that, you know, Obi-Wan cannot bring himself to make the final killing blow. Mm-hmm. But my headcanon for Revenge of the Sith is he's going to die here alone. And I, you know, I need to get moving. I need to get back to Padme. I can't bring myself to make that decisive cut, but he's done for. He's gone, right. You know?
Right.
He's limbless except for the mechanical one, and he's, you know, burning. It's, yeah, you know.
It's not looking
So, yeah. So I think he walks away thinking it's over, you know, and he's wrestling with that, the horror of that. Mm. So I do like the idea. You were joking about, like, he's in the bar and he overhears a deep space pilot switch from talking about the angels on the Moon Diego to, like, hey, you heard about that Darth Vader guy. You know, I don't want anything clunky like that, but I would love it if he is hearing, like, rumblings of this horror show, you know, because I like that idea, tapping into the mythic nature of Star Wars, that in the galaxy, the myth of Vader is echoing out, you know, that there are people who aren't like, yes, I know Darth Vader. He lives on Mustafar in a castle and he is cybernetic, but more that just, you know, I saw his shadow once, you know, I walked to the room after he left and there was nothing but body parts and I felt right. Cold, like, you know, that awareness that there is some just boogeyman of the Empire. I like the idea of Kenobi becoming aware of that. And then I like the idea of Kenobi being proactive and reaching out, you know, and trying to find Vader.
Yeah.
And like within meditation, having that epiphany, you know?
Yeah. And having it dawn. If we see the dawning of it and the emotional impact, and you could have a real great acting moment with that too. I'll say that as well. I know I said maybe I wanted to happen off camera outside of the show, but that could work for me. Look, it's clearly going to be a press conference. He's going to be watching it on TV and Vader will say, this is where the fun begins. And Kenobi goes, wait a minute. No, but they've played. There's two great moments that stand out to me of, in the Tarkin novel, right? With Lucino, writing that Tarkin kind of figuring it out, just stuff about Vader seems too familiar, you know, just like, whatever happened to that Anakin guy. And then I think the reveal it's totally different. You wouldn't have the same beat with Kenobi, but the Ahsoka Vader apprentice Anakin, like that moment really worked for me. And what was a highly anticipated connection, and how's she going to figure out, and how's she going to know? So it's feelings, it's the Force, it's that kind of connection. I think you're right. I think Obi-Wan reaching on out to kind of confirm what he's hearing is that's something I'd be willing to explore.
Yeah. And that you're right. There's that great confirmation moment with Ahsoka and Vader, but she in Rebels goes through some sensing and looking, right? And
correct. Yeah.
Looking into the Force and feeling like, I think I feel this. It can't be. Yeah. The other, I think, interesting factor in this is, you know, Obi-Wan has two missions when he goes to Tatooine. One is to watch over Luke, and the other is to commune with Qui-Gon and learn the path to a selfless immortality.
Right.
And in theory, you know, I think Qui-Gon is probably, you know, being one with the Force, quite aware of everything that has ever been and everything that could possibly be. So if he's, you know, communing with Qui-Gon, that's an interesting wrinkle too, is a part of this story that he is trying to commune with Qui-Gon for years. And there's a part of Obi-Wan that's holding back because he doesn't want to know what Qui-Gon knows.
Hold on. Stop the presses. I've kind of forgotten about the Qui-Gon of it all. Like the connection and the rumors. And I have no confirmation. I don't want any confirmation. But the idea of that it's not just easy to go dial up Qui-Gon. That's why, like you said, Yoda's got a lesson for him, right? Like, that could be pretty powerful. And just what's some kind of mental health kind of digging in, like therapy kind of session Kenobi could be having along the way. And then when he finally gets it and it's Liam Neeson going, yeah. It's the boy.
It's the boy. And does Qui-Gon believe there's still hope for him? You know?
Yeah. Yes. What have you done to me? I can't carry that expectation around anymore, Joseph. I can't.
There's rich veins of possibility in Kenobi, and I'm sure they'll tap, you know, some, if not all of them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But great question, Dr. Addy. As you can see, it excites us very much. Mm-hmm. We've got yet another Kenobi question, Ken. This comes from Daniel Wolf. Daniel says, could the Obi-Wan series pick up where Solo left off and have him deal with Crimson Dawn and give us an Ewan Obi-Wan versus Rey Maul rematch? I'm talking to someone who says it can't and shouldn't happen because of Clone Wars. I love it when people send us fun questions of like, my friends and I are debating. What do you think?
Yeah.
That's very, very fun. Where do you go with this, Ken?
Great thought, Daniel. The idea of Ewan and Rey having an actual on-camera physical rematch is pretty cool to me. I think I shy away from this idea. I'm not saying it couldn't happen. I shy away from it just because I love this idea of Maul going around the galaxy, angry as all get out, just tortured inside and out. And Kenobi's over there, like, just grilling a hot dog and doesn't, not that he doesn't care, but just he ain't there for it, buddy. He ain't there for it, pal. So Kenobi versus Crimson Dawn or any kind of smugglers or anything, like, yeah, that's fine for me, too. It doesn't necessarily carry the weight for me, but I just love that that's part of Maul's story, too. I'm so angry with me. Why? I forgive you. We're good. Sit down.
No!
Yeah, I mean, there's something very interesting about Maul. Has poor Maul has so much to be angry about. And if one of the things during this era is he thinks Kenobi probably died and I didn't get to kill him, and that's what he's angry about, you know?
Yeah.
Not the possibility that he's still out there.
Yeah.
I think for me, just canon wise, I don't think there's any reason that it couldn't happen. I think there's the subjective, how could it happen and cover new ground, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's where I go for it. If they hadn't announced the confirmation of Hayden is back, it's Vader, it's this rematch of the century, I'd be like, okay, here are different ways that you could maybe explore Maul versus Obi-Wan. But I think the fact that we know it's that journey, it makes me feel like, it makes me in general happy with the journey that we've got between Obi-Wan and Maul, their initial great conflict in The Phantom Menace, all of the back and forth in the Clone Wars, Obi-Wan demonstrating again and again in the Clone Wars that Maul can't break him. You know, Maul can murder people he loves in front of him. And Obi-Wan going, yes, of course, that makes me want to kill you, but I'm not going to. That's the power of the light side.
Yeah.
Even down to what we got in season 7 of Obi-Wan being very, very clear. Like, there's no part of me that is tempted to go to Mandalore to kick Maul's ass because he's my quote unquote enemy. Mm. I want to do whatever is right for what I think is the greater purpose of the galaxy, you know, and him being so clear when Ahsoka's asking for their help,
yeah,
for him to go like, no, I'm being asked to do this. We need to go back to Coruscant, you know?
Yeah.
That's already kind of a story of Obi-Wan saying, I'm not going to get involved in this, you know, I'm not interested in having a rival, you know?
Yeah.
If I get the opportunity, I will try to do my duty and stop you. Mm. You know, he goes through that in Clone Wars where he does actively go out and say, it is my responsibility to stop him. But he seems like he's not obsessed with that. So I guess for me, like some of the only, the things that might be emotionally interesting is if Kenobi is already dealing with his baggage of like, I didn't handle Vader and oh, Maul's out there too. And I never ended that. Maybe that adds more like just his, hey, at least I finished off Grievous. But besides that,
yeah,
my track record's not going great here. Maybe that would be interesting. Mm. The only other thing, this is wild, Ken. This is not a prediction. This is wild playground at a bar on a Star Wars bar on a cruise ship. What if? There is something interesting to me of if Maul and Vader come into some sort of conflict.
Yeah, yeah. I was just thinking about that. Isn't it interesting that Vader's out there and Maul's in the shadows, probably upset too?
Yeah, and I mean, Maul really expresses in Rebels, like, yeah, no, Vader's coming and I'm not taking him alone.
Yeah, right.
There's a part of me that thinks that would be extremely interesting if there was some sort of conflict between Maul and Vader, and then
yeah,
and then Kenobi shows up in the middle of it, like, I need to talk to both of you, but mostly Vader.
Maul, can we have the room? Can Darth and I have the room?
Yeah. I don't know. There's a part of me that's just, I think I wrestle with it, because I think everything that's there with Kenobi and Maul is so rich, particularly the button that is put on it by the Twin Suns episode of Rebels. I think also there's that, you know, this goes into the debate that I think we've had as a fandom and as a culture about Luke Skywalker's appearance in Mandalorian.
Mm-hmm.
Of some people like us really like it because it makes sense for, we think it makes sense for the character and where he's at, that he is answering the cry of a traumatized child who wants his help. Like, mm-hmm, that's our hero, you know? And there are other people who just really wanted to see Luke Skywalker just go to town with his awesome powers. And yeah, they got that. And then there's even more people who think that, oh, well, Star Wars is afraid to do anything but give the fans exactly what they wanted.
Right. Yeah.
And so there's a part of me is like, ooh, I get really intrigued as a Star Wars fan going, well, what are the emotional possibilities if Maul and Vader have a fight and then Kenobi shows up in the middle of it? But then there's that part of me that has hesitancy because it
mm-hmm,
no matter how organic it is to the story, it raises all of these different specters of, is this just fan service? Is this just people saying, have been saying for decades, I want to see Maul and Vader fight because it'd be badass. Like,
right.
There's a lot there that makes it more complex.
Well, we're going to let the Force Center listeners know right now, episode 3 of Kenobi, we're actually in the cast. It's an episode of Databank Brawl. we just start the show. We're in a bar in Tatooine, and Joseph pulls the characters out of the hat, and it's Vader Maul. But no, you're right, because there's something that you got me intrigued by, Vader Maul. But I got a good friend out in, now lives out in Texas, but was out here in the industry for a long time. He'll still just call me randomly. How you doing? I'm great. Yeah, Kenobi idea sucks. Just still go, no creativity over there. And I'm like, hey, how are you? You good? How's life out there in Houston? No, they're out of ideas. Kenobi sucks. Like, the show hasn't, they haven't even started shooting the show. Give it a chance.
Yeah. I think for me, when Star Wars opinions replace hellos, that will be a time for me to check myself.
Exactly.
But great question, Daniel. The short answer is, I don't think there's any canon reason it couldn't happen. And I think the fun thing to speculate on is, what would this story be? What would that tell us about Kenobi? What would that tell us about Maul?
Yeah.
They got to have a rematch. Because I know it would look cool. No doubt there.
No doubt.
Moving on to questions from our patrons on Patreon. First comes one comes from PQ. There have been a lot of great memory shows lately. I think Pat is referring to some of the shows that you and I have been doing for our deep dive, Ken, where we talk through some of our Star Wars memories. Yeah. So Pat says, there have been a lot of great memory shows lately, which made me think of the following. Do you have any Star Wars book memories? I was born in 82, which means I grew up in the dark times of Star Wars. I still remember going to the B. Dalton in Maplewood Mall, Minnesota. Shout out, Joseph. Thank you, PQ. And seeing Heir to the Empire. New Star Wars, be still my beating heart. In an era when there was only the VHS tapes and the Lucasfilm fan club, I devoured those books. A memory I think that many people have of just the utter shock and joy of discovering Heir to the Empire. Ken, what are your most treasured Star Wars book memories?
Yeah, I think we might be doing Star Wars Ranked upcoming of telling you and I telling some of our favorite stories of how we got some of the items, which we've touched on some of those. And so there's some with around the novelizations that I think I'll answer fully later on, but I've got some warm memories there, Pat. But I do want to talk about the Heir to the Empire one, and I think I know I've touched upon it before. Hey, when you've been broadcasting Star Wars stories for 6 years, you might touch on things you've talked about before. But I'll say it here and I'll say it now. I was in a grocery store. It was a Lucky's. If everyone knows the Lucky's brand, it might have been a West Coast brand. Lucky's in line, and my I'm 10th grade, I think at this time. And my mom's, getting ready to pay with a check for the groceries. And I see a paperback copy of Heir to the Empire. And I missed the hard copy run. and it was that was the day, if you didn't get the Star Wars newsletters or Lucasfilm fan club, there was no StarWars.com to go to. And my friends weren't talking about it because you had to be hush hush on your love of Star Wars. So I didn't know. And I just got so excited, and I had exactly that feeling that Pat's talking about of, wait, there's more? There's more. We're not done? Oh, my God. And pulled it off the shelf, and my mom probably had to front me the allowance money for it. I got it. And in the years since, even up till now, I'll say this, Zahn's a great writer. I don't connect with a lot of his Star Wars stuff as other people do. I don't like a lot of the modern Thrawn stuff as much as other people do. I think there's some good stuff in there. Again, he knows what he's doing with the written word. And Heir to the Empire, the series, has not held up for me as much as maybe it has for others. But I cannot shy away from the power of that book and the power of that moment of just seeing more Star Wars and grabbing that book and just flipping through the pages and the world of possibilities that spring up from them before we even read page one, and which around page one is hot chocolate, Coruscant, and Kenobi leaving. But I'll never take that away. And if I was ever to really, I've been around Zahn. I have an autographed copy of Heir to the Empire. If I ever get the chance to off camera, not on stage at a convention, that's what I'd say to him of thank you for bringing back and doing your part and expanding this universe for a kid that thought it was done. That's pretty powerful. And I'm with you there, Pat, on that story.
Yeah, I mean, the weight and the importance of Heir to the Empire, so many people's introduction to Star Wars is profound. I remember buying it. I know I was aware of it, but, I think it was probably like, sometimes bookstores would have like actual pieces of paper that they would give out of like, here are books that are coming out. I'm sure I saw it like flipping through, and I was desperate for so many years. I think I've told you before, I've never seen Willow because I saw the commercial on television and for a split second, I thought it was new Star Wars. And then when it wasn't, I got so mad that I never my family didn't go to the theater a ton and I had to really sort of like advocate, like, I need to see this. And as Willow's like, that not Star Wars? No, thank you.
right.
Because that was how hungry I was for Star Wars. That feeling like even Will briefly making me think it was Star Wars, then not being Star Wars made me mad. So Heir to the Empire was thrilling. Yeah, I did save up my allowance and I bought it in hardcover. And I remember sitting down and cracking it open and just, feeling like this is amazing that I can go back into this world. So that's definitely a good book memory for me. One of the ones that really sticks in my head is I had a job for a while. One of my very first jobs was at a bank in Minneapolis, and it was in the return checks department, which was in the basement of a parking garage. So it was, not a fun or exciting place. You know, so one of my main jobs was to stamp the reason that the check had been rejected.
Oh, and wow.
One of them, I had to stamp NSF for insufficient funds, and the person had literally written on the check, only 50 cents, as if to plead with the universe, and it was so depressing. But I was working this job, save up money for my drum set, and I just needed some joy, and I didn't have a lot of money because I was saving it. There's a great bookstore in downtown Minneapolis at the time called Baxter's Books, and they had the novelization of Star Wars, of A New Hope. And just to give myself energy for getting through the day, I would leave for my job early. I would get downtown like 90 minutes early, and I just sat in Baxter's Books and I read the entire Star Wars novelization one day at a time to fuel me through that depressing job.
There you go. The power of Star Wars reaches amazing depths.
It does, all the way down to the basement of a parking garage.
Oh, I love that. That's great.
Yeah, great one. Great one, PQ. Thank you very much. We'll move on to our final question from Michael McCarcel. Michael says, upon learning that I'm a big Star Wars fan, a new coworker decided he needed to give me his Star Wars hot take. He tried to make the claim that the Jedi were terrorists. I tried to explain to him that it seemed like a very odd take and that he seemed to be ignoring the actual context of the story. Was the Jedi Order perfect? Absolutely not. Do they make mistakes? Certainly. Do they commit acts of terror? No. I tried to talk it through with him, but he just insisted that they were terrorists regardless and wasn't really interested in an actual discussion. Oh, well, not everyone wants to go deep in these discussions, and that's okay. This is certainly not the first weird hot take I've heard that didn't make much sense. This brings me to my question. What weird nonsense, out of context, etc. hot takes have you heard that really get to you and make you feel you need to take a few deep breaths? Thanks, and may the force be with you. Ken, not that you're not going to have another answer, but it's so awesome that you already did share.
Yes. Yes.
The hot take that your friend calls up to tells you what part of Star Wars that hasn't come out yet is going to suck.
I don't. He's one of the only people I know who will still call before he texts, right? Which I respect. And when I see that, I don't answer it. I wait till he leaves a message or I call back later when I'm ready to deal with it because I know that's what's going to happen. That's every time. Hey, how are you? Man, they still doing that Kenobi show? What are they? Cannot believe they're out of ideas. Michael, this is a great question. First of all, Jedi is terrorist take. Like, you know, we've talked about justice for the Jedi, but we've talked about the prequels kind of showing some things, but it's so I can understand that a genesis of an idea deep, deep down of the Jedi are doing some things wrong, but to go to that degree, that's tough. And you just want to engage. You want to talk especially if it's not on a podcast or a YouTube video, just like, oh, we're two folks talking Star Wars. Great. I don't know where you go with that one. So Michael, I'll start there. I just give me a hug, man. Give me a hug.
Yeah, I think the for me, important part of Michael's great question here is he relates this story that Michael answered his new coworker back with some thoughts from the storytelling of Star Wars. And then Michael says his coworker wasn't really interested in actual discussion. I think that those are the things that really bum me out. Like if somebody has a strong opinion and they have a reason for it and I disagree, I don't mind having a conversation. What bums me out is when somebody just has a headline with no supporting evidence and then doesn't want to have a discussion. That's always a bummer to me. And the ones that I've encountered are the Jedi, but also the Empire is actually the hero, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think maybe that might be, Ken, a perspective of years. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember having this conversation in the early 2000s where people went, you know, from a certain point of view, the Death Star is a government facility. They are the legitimate government. And here the rebels come in and just blow it up. And they do murder a bunch of people. Mm. And this sort of sometimes playful, sometimes serious, but wait, I'm going to turn it all upside down and shock you. The Empire, the good guys. That's a take I have been aware of for many years.
Right.
So I get frustrated when somebody tries to present that to me as a groundbreaking new take.
Yeah.
Because I've been familiar with it for an extremely long time. I understand where it comes from, but I don't think it is supported in any way by the actual storytelling and morality of Star Wars.
Yeah. Well, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's even when it got kind of rekindled in 2014, 2015, and Claudia Gray had some great stuff in Lost Stars about those in the Empire dealing with that loss and something that we could get into. But yeah, Star Wars time and time again asks about those choices. And again, I love this reveal in Alphabet Squadron that the Emperor was keeping track of everyone's little mistakes because he knew what it added to. And so, yeah, I think to stop there at the heroes on both sides that Lucas put in the crawl, to quote Princess Bride, I don't think that word means what you think it means. you have to go deeper with that. And I think that's part of the problem with having some kind of discussions. We here at Force Center try to be very open and respectful, and there's different things and different and where you are when you're in your life. And I think a lot of that, but there's sometimes you run up to a brick wall, and I just don't know how to deal with it. I don't have any specific take. I just had one in the Game of Thrones world where a friend of mine was like, no, the whole point of Game of Thrones, particularly season 8, was to show that the only way you get true power is through violence. I was like, that wasn't the point of the show. And I don't know where to go from there. And they're like, nope, that's what the show was about. Okay. So there's some of those Star Wars takes too, where I just like, okay.
Yeah, I think there's also, I've been thinking about this a lot. I think that there is this great tension with Star Wars in that the Star Wars is for everyone to engage with at any level. But I keep seeing a little bit of a difference between people who like Star Wars, maybe mixed on Star Wars, but approach each movie as its own thing.
Yeah.
And yes, absolutely. Each film should be its own meal, right? You should pay $15 and you go see a film and it has a beginning, a middle, and an end in a story, and characters grow and change, and you have seen a story. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But a lot of the disconnect that I see in conversations are from people who kind of look at each individual movie as its own story.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Those of us who choose to, it's not necessarily the right way, but those of us who choose to really look at all of Star Wars as this connected story, there's just like, I think a real difference in perspective. And that's where I think where some of these conversations can break down.
Yeah. And I'm trying to get to answer Michael's questions of kind of a hot take that's inside the story. Right. But I'm always up for a good theory. I'll hear you. I'll go down that path. Darth Jar Jar. Great. Let's do it. Let's figure it out. And I don't have a specific answer right now for Michael, because sometimes it's been the last 5-6 years, the battle face, because I've had the conversations of we can talk about, yeah, maybe you don't think there was an arc for Finn, blah blah, and we can get into that discussion, and maybe you and I, Joseph, might respectfully disagree with that statement, but we can have that discussion. But then I had one person directly tell me, I don't like that they forced me to have to watch Finn and Rose kiss. I was like, well, we're having a different conversation right now, then, aren't we? And it ain't about Star Wars. Yeah, it's not about Star Wars. It invokes me not having a clear answer, Michael. You've invoked some passion in me.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think just to directly answer Michael's question, definitely the Empire is secretly the good guys is a hot take that caused me to take a few deep breaths. Some ones that I think are more understandable, but I still wrestle with, that Star Wars is only celebrates special people with special blood. You know, that's one that I feel strongly about, because I think, I don't want to get into essays about why I disagree, but, just going all the way back to A New Hope and Luke is the only one who's going to make the shot at the Death Star, but he couldn't have got that chance without everyone else did in that film, right? And Rogue One and Han Solo turning around. And would Han Solo have even turned around if Chewie hadn't kept roaring in his ear off screen? We don't know,
right?
So I think that's one there. Sometimes I have to take a deep breath and understand where other people are coming from. And if they want to have a conversation, it's a fun conversation to have. But for me, it definitely requires a deep breath.
Yeah, and I think one in story one for me, just in terms of watching the movie, not to open up that Pandora's box, but just hearing, the whole point of Last Jedi was to, destroy the past, kill it if you have to. And that's when I usually just pack up my lunchbox and close it and get up and leave the lunchroom.
Yes. I have never said this to anyone in person, but in frustrated moments in my imagination. when people have said that kind of thing about Last Jedi, it's all about ruining the, just getting, changing Star Wars and killing the past. And then Rise of Skywalker just goes right back to it. And I have said in my head so many times, please, please watch just the third act of The Last Jedi. And then let's have this conversation again.
Yeah. See, now the floodgates are opening, huh, Joseph? Now the floodgates.
They really are.
Luke, please. Luke grabbed that lightsaber in Rise of Skywalker as a insult to Rian Johnson. Not third act Luke from Last yes. Jedi. Not third act Luke.
The one who said, I will not be The Last Jedi. I will not be the title of the film.
Oh, Star yeah. Wars.
Okay, look, Michael, you got us. We were trying. Yeah. Not that you were trying to do that, Michael, but yeah. I think it just goes to show that one of the great things about Star Wars is, in discussing Star Wars, is it's always an opportunity to wrestle with the themes of Star Wars for me. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Of the temptation toward anger is right there.
Yeah.
Quicker, easier, more seductive to just start yelling, you're wrong, you're wrong. But the better path is to try to say, here's what I see, here's what I feel, and hopefully we can have a discussion.
Make the choice to be better.
Yeah. Yeah. Great questions. Was that not believable?
I'm taking a big, this is water. I wish it was whiskey.
Yeah. Yeah. No, great question, Michael. Great question. PQ, Daniel, and Dr. Addy. Lots of fun Kenobi and lots of fun discussion of how we approach Star Wars and treasure those books. That's it for the questions, Ken.
That's it for the questions. And that's it for this episode. But we got a lot of Force Center Star Wars broadcasting coming here with a Bad Batch on the way. Two episodes, basically, back to back. We're right there with it. And a lot more coming. So if you want to find us online, we're at Twitter, Force Center Pod. We're on Instagram, YouTube as well. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. Podcasts available on Anchor, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Amazon Music, and Spotify. Merch available at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter and patreon.com/ForceCenter, where you can support us directly. Your support goes to keeping the show alive, but also adding some wonderful things like Tony Thaxton's theme music for a lot of the shows and more. So we appreciate that. You can follow me at Ken Knapsack or go to kennapsack.com for more information. Joseph.
Yeah, you can find me Twitter and Instagram at Joseph Scrimshaw, and you can check out all my other comedy adventures on my website at josephscrimshaw.com. Mm-hmm. In particular, if you enjoy the media discussions in general, and that extends to the MCU, my wife and I just recorded an episode of our podcast, Obsessed, obsessing over the Falcon and the Winter Soldier. So there's a link to my podcast, Obsessed, right there on my website, josephscrimshaw.com, if that sounds interesting to you.
And it should, folks. It should. It should. All right. That is it for this week. So for a Kenobi, which we know is a great idea, we can't wait to see more. We'll see y'all. This was Force Center.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, I'm Guy Raz, and on my show, Wisdom from the Top, I talk with CEOs and business leaders about the toughest challenges of their careers.
There's lots of ways to measure success.
Sometimes a company has to bet against itself.
We wanted to set ourselves apart by having a point of view.
Businesses really impact people's lives in pretty fundamental ways.
On Wisdom from the Top, some of the greatest business leaders of our time share their intimate stories of leadership, innovation, and transformation. Stories you won't hear anywhere else. Check out Wisdom from the Top only on Luminary. Now, back to your show.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.